a mouthful of Fig bars. How's that sound?
Shut up and sit down.
Some people just don't understand how basic things work.
Because technology is bad.
I wake up, I get dressed, go back to sleep, get up again, and then I slowly creep through the house. It's getting dark, I can't see. Make sure that I lock the door behind me. I head downstairs, unlock the bike, hop on and say peace out to the night. Y'all, the sun is slowly rising in the east. It's just another day, part of another week. I hit the street, make a right, head up the hill, wait at the light so that I don't get killed by an early morning driver. I'm an early morning bike rider, and I'ma try to...
You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Grand, Evan Price, Lance Hapler, and Jake Von Turing. Enjoy the show and thank you for listening. Wait, crap, I forgot to edit this vanilla intro they send me every week. I guess I need a vacation. Do any of you want to go camping with me?
Let's go camping!
I got to go on my bicycle. That's how I roll. I set a 14 gears and a pair of wheels. When I'm on my bicycle, don't do tricks cause I got no skills. When I'm on my bicycle, I just
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Von Dering, and I'm here with Lance Hepler, kind of.
Lance, romance, kind of here, sitting on my sister's back porch in Mesa, Arizona at the moment, so.
How's the temperature down there, Hep?
You know what? It was only like 60 degrees here today. It wasn't too hot. But it's 70 now. I take it back. It's 70. it's perfect. I'm outside in my shirt sleeves, so go figure.
Right on. This week, we've got a couple special guests on the podcast. We've got sitting here with me today, we've got Nate Scott. How are you, Nate?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. And then also calling in with us this week, Mike Guyvan. But some of you guys might, am I allowed to make the connection here, Mike, of your Strava name? Okay. Some of you might know him as Beef Mountains, and that is a well-deserved title. But Mike, how are you?
Feeling pretty good besides the voice.
Yeah. Mike's a little bit under the weather right now. He laid it all out at team training camp and left everything on the side of a bunch of mountains, and his immune system is starting to get the better of him, I guess. So cool. Hey, we're going to do kind of a different episode this week. We've got some different people in here. We're going to talk about some other cool things, but before we do that, let's go ahead and do a quick backpedal. Lance, you want to kick us off real quick?
Am I going to backpedal for the whole last 2 weeks? Because are we just going to forget the fact that we did not record a podcast last week? we totally missed it.
Didn't miss. There was too much stuff going on. The training camp was too awesome. It just didn't ever line up. I mean, I had all intentions, took all the equipment, just didn't happen. So I feel bad for that. But how about you backpedal back to Sunday? Because we're recording this the day it's going to come out. This isn't our normal Monday giddy up, because when we got back into town after being gone for a week, things kind of piled up a little bit. So yeah.
So you just want me to back for the last couple of days and
sure, why not?
Camp?
Yeah, yeah. Right. We'll get into that training camp mumbo jumbo here in a minute.
After training camp, I jumped in my van. I'm also on my back porch with several of my nephews and nieces, and so they are playing in the pool. If you hear some screaming in the background, and my 26-year-old son who acts like an 8-year-old sometimes. Anyway. I jumped in my van and headed east. Actually, I went down and I found Matt LeGrand, who was also in California. We had done our training camp in Fallbrook, California, which is in San Diego County. And Matt happened to be in Oceanside with his family for a little weekend trip. And I went down and I found him on Find My Friends. He didn't know I was coming. And I stood in the street outside his Airbnb, and he had just ordered a pizza for his family and they were supposed to be delivering it, and he thought I was the pizza guy. And so he walked out on the street at night, and I'm like, "Hey Matt, what's going on?" And he's like, "What, Lance, what are you doing?" So we had a great night hanging out with the whole LeGrand crew. We didn't stay at their place, but stayed nearby, and then I threw Matt on my gravel bike, which everybody got to use this week at training camp. And me and Matt went for a ride along the beach and along the bike path in Oceanside, California. So that was super nice. Then my wife and I headed further east. We headed towards Arizona. We ended up in Tucson for a couple of days. I rode some mountain bikes and rode some road bikes in Tucson. There is a loop. There's a bike path loop that circles Tucson that is 55 miles long. And so Brandy rode the whole thing with me. My wife rode the whole thing with me. It was super great, like, recovery pace for me. And Brandy rode the whole, like, 52 miles. So that was very cool that she gutted it out for that whole thing. Weather was chilly in Tucson, still only, like, 55 degrees. It really wasn't that warm. Then we went down to Tombstone, and I got lost out in the woods. My wife and I went rock hounding for turquoise near a turquoise mine near the Mexican border. And I lost my phone and had to use my wife's phone and my Apple Watch to actually find it. Got myself all scratched up trying to do that. And, well, now we're in Mesa.
Yeah, so Lance sent me a text about this, losing his phone because he was late getting back to a text. I mean, he's like, was rock hounding for turquoise near Mexican border, lost my phone. I'm like, that's something I'll never hear again in my life. So,
good. It was pretty funny. So now we're here for a couple of days. I'll be in Scottsdale at an investor conference for a couple of days. And so hopefully I'll get to ride a little bit.
Cool. We're going to miss you this weekend.
See, I still couldn't even make it short, even when you told me only go 2 days. So Hepler's out.
Nate, why don't you backpedal for us?
Not very interesting. Not like Lance's, at least. After a week outdoors, it was all Zwift. So I'm trying to keep it low intensity. And did what I've done, maybe 3 recovery rides so far.
Yeah.
And gearing up for a time trial.
There you go. He's going to come out and race with us this weekend.
Yeah.
Sweet. Mr. Beef Mountains, Guy Van. Backpedal, buddy. What have you been up to? You kind of did training camp the hard way in that you decided to drive. How many hours was it?
It was 17 hours drive. Yeah.
With a wife who's 7 months pregnant and 2 boys who are, what, 3 and 6 or something like that?
3 and 7, yeah.
3 and 7? So, yeah, how did that go?
Well, on the way there, it wasn't too bad. We drove through it at night, so everybody was sleeping. So that wasn't too bad, but yeah, on the way back was a whole different story because we drove through the day and I was getting sick and it was, terrible.
Dad, are we there yet?
Yeah, but besides the drive, my back pedal is very similar to Nate's. It was basically outdoors for a week and then back indoors.
There you go. Gotcha. And then my back pedal, we got back, well, the last day of training camp was spectacular, but we're not going to go there yet. And then we got back and we did a preview of the course that we're doing this weekend for the Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial. And there was a bunch of people that showed up for that. I was actually quite surprised. It was nice to see a bunch of folks out there and jumped on the gravel bike. That's another story that we can talk about with respect to the training camp. And that was fun. And then took Monday off and Tuesday last night, a glorious, glorious night. You know why? Well, We did climb Alpe de Zwift, so everybody was flying up that. Or a lot of people, some of the usual suspects weren't there. Like Nate, he wasn't up there like drilling us. But that was fun. But the best part about that is I know that when we're doing a Tuesday night Alpe de Zwift, that means it's the last Zwift ride for the winter season because the time change is coming and we're gonna switch to outside and those things are over. So au revoir Zwift Tuesday night rides until next October. That is a thing of beauty. So. Kind of happy about that.
That's like a happy day. That's a happy day.
It is a happy day. And then we've got the time trial coming up this weekend, which is kind of cool. The time change is coming up this weekend, which is kind of cool. Washington's lifting its mask mandates this weekend. That's kind of cool. So there's a lot of good stuff happening. This next coming week is going to be pretty, pretty cool. Looking forward to it. Cool. All right. So this week, Champ Bailey's going to stay at home. Champ Bailey, where is Champ these days? Is he still back in San Diego?
He's stuck on the Mexican border.
Looking for turquoise, huh? And
looking for turquoise.
Yeah. Well, we're going to skip all that stuff, and we're going to just jump into our topic this week. And the main reason why we brought these boys on here to talk with us, we all got to experience this training camp. We're going to talk about the training camp that we just had, and we're going to jump into some training camp essentials that we think that everybody should take into consideration for a training camp that they might do themselves in the future, or if they've ever been to one, maybe some things that they should think about to integrate into theirs to make their training camp a little bit more special if they've never done one. Really want to try and convince you, A, to go do one, and B, here's some something of a playlist that you can take that you can use to come up with a successful training camp for you and your friends. So let's run around the table, and I'm sure stories will spin out of this that we can get into, but let's start with the first person here. Lance, I always start with you. So we're going to go last with you this week. Nate, what's one thing that you think is a definite essential that folks need to have for their training camp?
A first aid kit.
A first aid kit? any reason why there, Nate?
Yes. Patches of gravel on the road are a bad thing at times. And when you're riding in a group and you have to slow down quickly and you're one of the few that has rim brakes.
Yep.
Yeah, I hit a patch of gravel and went down. That was the first time I've gone down in that sort of way, and had a nice dose of road rash. So I can't remember the name of the bandages or the type of bandage.
Tagoderm.
That stuff is money.
It's magical, isn't it?
And yes, so first aid kit is, you're going to need it.
Yeah, I think every cyclist, I don't care what discipline, every cyclist should have Tagoderm stocked at their house and just have that on call for all times, because it truly does make a night and day difference with respect to the recovery, your ability to be mobile, to be able to take a shower, to sleep in a bed. What's worse than waking up with your hip fused to your sheets and having to pull that off first thing in the morning? It's just terrible.
And honestly, it's like it didn't happen. If you have that Tagoderm on there,
yeah,
it covered my wounds. I was able to ride the next day, and I didn't feel anything in those areas. It was fine. I slept fine.
Yep.
I was able to shower fine, you name it. So that's a game changer.
Yeah, if you just put regular bandages on there, just in your kit, that the bandages and the tape would have probably rolled back. It probably would have been seeping through and bleeding. You'd have blood everywhere on your kit and be uncomfortable, and you just want to get off the bike, and that's not what you want to do when you're in the middle of a training camp. Yep. Good call, my friend. Mr. Guy,
we were actually very, very fortunate, because Nate's little dust up was the only incident we had in the whole week in our training camp. That was very fortunate. And he just kind of hit the deck in one little spot and just lost a little bit of skin. His bike damage was minimal, or we were able to repair it. We'll get to that when my turn comes around. But we were fortunate that we didn't have any worse incidents than what happened to Nate.
Yeah, that's just what you get when you got a big group of guys that are responsible, not to say that other people aren't, but they kind of have some savvy about them that know what to do, but things do happen. I mean, Nate's an experienced rider, and he just had an unfortunate situation, caught a little gravel, came in a little hot, and went down. So it happens.
Yeah.
So cool. Mike, what's something that you would recommend folks bring or have at training camp for a successful training camp? An essential.
So I have two things.
Just give us one and save the other one for later.
Okay. Ahead. So the first thing is, for me, I left my usual electrolyte at home because it was in a big, like, 2-gallon bucket almost type of deal. So I was like, well, that's too big for me to take. So I left it at home. And then I went to Costco and I got that. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's like a liquid IV electrolyte powder type of deal. To put it nicely, I was mild-mannered at the house, but when we got to the hotel, it was a whole different story.
Wait, so the family got the real Mike Guy Man, and the team got the easy, nice one? Is that what happened?
Correct. It was. I could not believe a human could produce that much gas.
Oh.
Yeah, it was something to behold.
Were the boys laughing? Mike brought us two boys, which were awesome, the whole camp. And, you know, they got to play with Lance's dog, Piper. And the three of them were like the three amigos just chasing each other all over the house. It was fantastic. But Did the boys get a kick out of you and your gastrointestinal issues that you were having?
For the first maybe hour or so, but then they had it also. it was something else.
Now, were you using that to your advantage when you were climbing uphill and taking a top 10?
Well, that's going into secrets right there.
Just real quick, for those of you who don't know, Mike is... He's quite the specimen of an athlete. He you're weighing in these days about what, 150, 150 pounds?
Just a little bit north.
He's like, yeah, 151.
between like 150 and 155. Gotcha. So it's just like right in there.
All right. We usually don't do this too often, but are you open to telling us what your FTP is? Not maybe currently, but what the peak of it has been in, say, like the last 12 months. You're probably pretty close to it right now anyway, but.
It was about like, I never truly like went full, like a true full, but the one that I did on an uphill, like when I was going for a KOM, I'd say it was, and this is a solid guess, not a guess, but a solid estimate, is a 380.
Okay. That's ridiculous. So where,
yes,
did,
it is.
Where does that put your watts per kilogram? You're like, what, 5.3, 5.4, somewhere there? 5.5?
That'd be right at 5.4.
5.4. Oh, Mike, that's beastly. And the part that scares me is the guy seems like he just continues to get faster and stronger and leaner. So I don't know. I think Mike and I have been conversing about him coming on the podcast and talking about some of his tips for success and things that he's utilized in his recent cycling career that have really helped him get lean and fast and strong. And I think we'll have him on a future podcast to talk more about that. But yeah, that's definitely a good one. So Mike's takeaway though for camp is make sure that you bring your normal training mixes, your hydration mixes, your meal replacements and all that other stuff so that you don't make a bunch of enemies.
Yeah.
Sure, the boys got a chuckle out of that, but yeah. Lance, how about you? What's something that you can toss on this list?
I think an essential thing is a proper toolkit to work on your bike. This is not taking consideration that your bike is in tune before you come to camp, but we were fortunate in that there were three or four of us actually driving to camp. So we could bring an actual bike stand and a full tool kit. We had extra tires, extra sealant. We had a lot of extra things to actually make it work right. And it turned out we were lucky in our group because we have two very experienced mechanics that were with the group, plus me, who is a fake mechanic. And so, but we ended up, Nate bent his derailleur hanger in his little mishap, and we had to doctor the derailleur hanger the extra one he had brought. And we were able to do that with the toolkit that we had. We also had to reseat several tubeless tires and reseal several tubeless tires and replace tires. We did some brake line work. We did a bunch of mechanical things that we didn't really anticipate that we thought we were going to have to do at camp. But I'm just glad we had enough of the stuff to do that. What am I missing? What else did we do, Jake?
We trued wheels. We bled brakes.
We trued wheels.
Yep. We adjusted derailleurs. We adjusted headsets. there's not much we didn't do. And not every group's going to have the ability to take, you know, a multitude of skilled mechanics with them, or, you know, just even have some people with like a lot of proficiencies. But if you're going to have a camp, maybe think about inviting somebody that's got those skills that can help out a little bit. I mean, that's always a nice thing, but it sure was nice because I can imagine that some of the predicaments that we got into probably in other people's experiences would have sent them to a local bike shop where the bike could have been held up for a couple of days, or maybe there's not even a bike shop that's close by and they're done, you know. But
yeah,
when Nate had a derailleur hanger, that he had to replace, and it just had these two raised sections on there that didn't allow the hanger to sit flush in there. It was for a different Fuji frame, if I'm not mistaken, that would have those as like to hold it in place, but his frame didn't have that. So Lance kind of busted out his old dentist day experiences of grinding things down, and he's I'm surprised you didn't have your little goggle glasses thing on that make you look like
I should have put my specs on. It would have been funny.
But Lance is just down there. He's working on it with the Dremels. It's grinding, and they're running back and forth and testing it out, and he got it just perfect, and we got it mounted up and everything tuned, and Nate's bike worked just fine for the rest of the trip. So that was special.
Lucked out there.
But a comprehensive kit is definitely something that you're going to want to take, especially when you've got a large group. I mean, we had 18 people at camp, and I think 17 of them were riding. Well, I'll say the Brandy rode too. I mean, she was at camp, but more as a SAG person, but she still got some reason. But our garage, 3-car garage that we had, it's empty because, you know, it's a VBR home or Verbo home, however you say that. We turned that into a bike shop and a wrenching area that a lot of bike shops would be jealous of. I mean, we had all the tools and the stands and places for all the bikes and everything. It was just a really nice setup, and it was nice to have that. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah.
All right. The one that I'm going to bring up that I think is an absolute essential is a SAG person, a SAG wagon, a SAG vehicle. That in some incidents means that somebody's going to be not riding their bike, but depending upon how you work it out, who comes to your camp there, a lot of times a camp is going to be, you know, a full week long. And some people might get to a station where they're like, you know what? I just need a day off. Or you know what? I only want to ride half the route. And somebody else is like, you know what? I only want to ride half the route as well. So maybe we'll split and you ride the first half and ride the second half. We've done that before. This time we were very fortunate. We had Lance's adventure wagon down there as in addition to a few other adventure wagons, but the adventure wagon, the Hepler adventure wagon, was decked out with all of the tools, all of the spare parts, the water tank that holds what, 30 gallons or something like that. I mean, we had everything that we needed, and we would have predetermined places where Brandy would be hanging out, and she loved it. She did fantastic. She got to, you know, chill out and sit in a chair and do her art stuff and in some pretty cool places with some pretty cool views. And then we would all come through there and our bottles would be full. We would be able to throw food in there if we had to make adjustments or whatever it was. The adventure wagon was there. And the second you saw that thing, there was always like this like smile that just kind of creeped on your face. You're like, oh, the adventure wagon. I get to go like take a break for a second and refuel and do all the fun things. So that was fantastic. Figure out a way though that you can figure out how to have some sort of a SAG vehicle supporting you and your group of folks, because it's going to make for a much more pleasurable experience. And in the event that somebody kind of gets in a bad way or they get hurt or they bonk or they're just not feeling it, they've got an out, and that's always nice too. Right?
We were super fortunate that not only Brandy could take the week off to kind of spend with us and that she was willing to just drive around and follow us for a full week. We did some routes that we would have had a much more difficult time doing because we had Brandy there. And that made a big difference. And I thought a lot about this. How would other teams do this? And you're right. The only way to do it is two people would have to split up a long ride to drive SAG support, you know, where somebody could drive SAG support and have extra water and things in a vehicle. It would just be a rental car, a rental, you know, minivan or, you know, an SUV or something. But it's difficult to do big routes without SAG support.
Yeah, there is an alternative to having that SAG vehicle. I mean, you're not going to have somebody that can pick you up. You're not going to have somebody out there with the parts and all that other stuff. But if it's strictly for food and water, you're going to have to have somebody either getting up super early in the morning or going out the night before and finding some area where you can stash a bunch of water bottles and maybe like a bag with some food in it and maybe some other minor things. And then you got to go back the next day and you got to get that, you know, that stuff out or whenever. That works too. It's just not the same. It's not as nearly as convenient. And having that vehicle there for you to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm not feeling it, pulling the plug, jumping in, and we're calling it a day. There's something nice about that. Now, I personally never wanted to have that be an option, and I never did use that as an option, but it was always nice to have that in the back of your head.
I did use it. I was one of the few people who actually used the SAG on one of our biggest days, I did not come into training camp actually very fit this year. And we had like a 24-mile climb on our third day. And I got 10 miles into the climb and said, nope, I'm done. And I rode in the van to the top of the climb and then got out and did the rest of the ride with the group. But I probably wouldn't have finished that whole route at all, or any of that route, if I had to do the whole climb. So having the van there to kind of give me a lift to the top was very beneficial for me. It made the rest of my week much more manageable.
Yeah, that was a big day. We started up in near Lake Henshaw, for anybody that knows, like the Southern California area, which is kind of at the base of Palomar-ish kind of area. Rode through and down into the Montezuma grade into the Anza Borrego Desert, and then we rode through the desert basin until we hit like an incline that goes back up towards Palomar, but into a little town called Julian. And that's the climb there that Lance jumped out. So when we were coming down the descent, down through the Montezuma Canyon grade or whatever it's called, I think I personally put more watts into that than I did in any other part of that whole ride, including the climb, because we were absolutely drilling the downhill on that. And then we got to... Yeah, and then we got to the flat part out there in the desert.
You, me, and Mike.
Yep, yeah. Me, you, and Mike. And then we got to the flat part. We're in the middle of the desert, and the temperature jumped up quite a bit. What was the temperature down there on the desert floor? It's like 84, 85, 86, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I mean, for people that are acclimated to warmer temperatures like I used to be when I used to live in Southern California, like, yeah, no big deal. I'm like, I could ride in 100-degree weather if I had to, and I still can, but I'll melt. And Lance was actually starting to display some signs of some heat exhaustion, not heat stroke, but heat exhaustion. And it's a good thing that you decided to call it and let your body kind of rally back and regroup and, you know, drink some fluids and put a Coke in you and eat some food and get a ride to the top and then kind of finish out the rest of the ride so that you can have a successful rest of your week. That, I think, was a good call. And I think that's a very important thing to be mindful of. But yeah,
I could have just ended up in the hospital because I am prone to heat illness. And so I could feel it coming. That was definitely part of it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Without SAG, I just would have gone to the hospital.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Nate, what's another one you got?
This is broad, but spare of really anything. So in my case, it was a spare derailleur hanger because, yeah, I knew that if my case was to get crushed,
yep,
then that was probably the most likely thing to bend. And mm-hmm. that would, my hanger, it's not going to be able to be bent back very many more times before it snaps. And that would be Correct. Game over for me.
Correct.
So that spare that I had, that I wasn't sure if it fit perfectly, but would be better than nothing.
Yep.
That saved it for me. But then the other part is we also had a spare bike,
yeah,
that was helpful because, yep, there was a broken frame during the training camp.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Lance, you want to tell that story?
Yeah. We had our teammate, Ed Dudlick. We were taking the descent that had a pretty rough road, and he hit a pothole, and his his carbon seat stay snapped on the descent. He didn't crash, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But obviously the carbon was snapped and he was done. This was the first day he was riding. And so it was like, oh man, he was going to be here for like three more days or something. And to find out that his carbon frame is fractured. Luckily, I have my gravel bike with me. I had my gravel bike, my road bike, my mountain bike, and my gravel bike will pretty much work on the road. And so I was able, Ed was able to take his wheels, put his wheels on my gravel bike. It fit him just fine. He could hang with us just fine on my gravel bike. It turned out to be very fortunate that he was able to ride because we had a spare bike with us. I think that'd be hard for people to have a spare bike, but luckily we had a spare bike.
Yeah, and that's one of the benefits of having somebody that does drive there. We had four people, including Mike, that drove to camp, which that's a long hike to get down there, but some of you guys like to do that, yeah, whole drivey thing, and the fact that you had an extra bike that we could use, that was fantastic. I mean, God, that couldn't have worked out any better. I mean, his bike had the Axis 12-speed drivetrain on it, and we just had to take his wheels and put your cassette on there so it would work with the one by drivetrain and not be a situation where he's going to be like totally spun out or too hard or whatnot. And
yeah,
Ed's a strong dude and you've got that big chain ring on there and it worked out really well. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people that had a hard time keeping up with that beast of a cyclist in Ed.
I still couldn't keep up with him, even though he was on the heavier frame, non-aero gravel bike. Yeah. So go figure.
I think that's a great testament for that BMC Ors gravel bike too, and how versatile it truly is. I mean, if you get the right chain ring on there, I've always told people these things will do really well on the road if you put some road slicks on there, but I never actually put it to practice. That thing did fantastic. It really did. So good stuff. But going back to your original thing, taking all the parts, I mean, if you can't take a full extra bike with you, the thing, especially like a derailleur hanger, every bike's derailleur hanger is different. So you should have spare stock. You should have one or two or three of those. And if you're traveling, always take one because the chances of those things getting bent are high. And if it does get bent, you're not going to be able to find one of those right away. I mean, you could probably find one on Amazon and maybe get it delivered to where you're at, but it's still going to take 2 days. Yep. So have one of those things in your back pocket. Proprietary things for sure. Chains, a good thing to bring with you. A spare tire is a good thing to bring with you.
How many tires did we go through?
A few, yep.
we went through three more tires. So we replaced three tires.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Three tires. We had rim tape we had to use. We had sealant, like a full bottle of sealant got used. I think those were the main things that we had extra of that we went through.
Gotcha. Cool. Mike, what else you got? You said you had two. What's the second one?
Yeah. So the second one's not really it's not an item, but for me, what made camp really enjoyable or more enjoyable was bringing fitness with you. Not necessarily peak fitness, but decent fitness to where you can have fun and not just suffer.
Yeah.
To me, and when you're coming in with decent fitness into training camp, I feel like it's a better use of training camp than just like suffering through it. It's like, oh, I'm kind of finally sort of in shape to actually start training.
Yeah. It does become quite a bit more enjoyable if you come to camp with some fitness. And I joked about that with a lot of people. Like you can get fit for training camp or you can get fit at training camp. I kind of did a little bit more of the latter, but I think as the week went on, I got a little bit stronger and I was able to hang. I wouldn't say that I was in A shape, but I think it worked out pretty well for me because I've done it before in the past where I came to training camp very, very fit. And then I went to training camp and just kind of blew it all out. And then you go to the start of the season and you almost feel like you peaked too soon, but you kind of like, I don't know, you kind of burn yourself up too soon. Like you maybe should not come fully fit and use that as kind of like that last stepping stone to get to where you want to be, as opposed to not burning yourself out, but more just being, you know, exhausted and needing a rest week and just, you got to time it right, I guess. That's just my two cents.
You know, for sure. And that's the way I mean, coming into training camp and peak fitness would just kind of be silly. But for the guys that I noticed, the guys that were kind of, I wouldn't say not having fun because I'm pretty sure everybody had fun there. But like for example, like myself, Nate.
I was not fit coming into camp and I suffered a lot.
And Paul, the three of us mostly rode together. We had at least I had an absolute blast with those two other guys. But then there were other people that you talked to. It's like, oh man, it just suffered. And it was so much fun. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I love that climb.
We hit a few climbs that had a little bit of a pitch to them. They're a little pitchy dog, right?
Yeah. It was pretty impressive. Some of the stuff that we had to go up.
That day in Duluth, my God, those climbs. Like I was riding with John Hatfield and I was riding with Chris Hannell, Dr. Shabadoo, and I think Lance was with us there too. And we started going up some of these climbs. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but I'm like, I just got to keep Hannell with me. I had to stay with Hannell. Hannell had already blown off the front. Hatfield I was trying to stay with, and these climbs were so stinking steep that it was taking all of my might just to turn the pedals over so I could keep up with them and not fall over at the same time. Those things were pretty nasty. Now, it wasn't Los Gatos steep or long, but it was still like at the end of the week when you're doing a 9,000 to 10,000 foot climbing day, unless you're Nate Scott and you're going to do what, 13,000 feet? Because
it was 12,
12, whatever. Still 12. Might as well be 13 at that point. It's just, I don't know. It's fun to say that you got through, but while you're in the moment, you're like, what in the world am I doing? But having the fitness to be able to keep up with him was good. And if I was suffering anymore, that would have been miserable trying to do that.
Yeah. I will say, and this is, I don't know if Nate was planning to bring this up, up one of those climbs, I forget which one it was, Nate gripped his handlebar so tight, his finger started to bleed.
You know what's funny? It actually did. Los Gatos, that lower Los Gatos, yeah, where I ended up getting the KOM.
Yeah,
got to the top, looked down, and my pinky had started bleeding again from the
wipeout. Gotcha. Cool. All right, what's the next one, Mr. Hepler?
Make sure you bring the proper clothing. Make sure you have all the right like kit options with you, you know, appropriately. We were going to Southern California, so not a lot of us brought like cold weather gear. We had most of our warm weather gear, and we got caught out one day. So we actually got caught out because we weren't going to do a ride that day because we saw rain coming, and then it looked like we had this big dry window. So we decided to go out and ride during this dry window, but the weatherman didn't quite get it right, and we got rained on, and then we got mildly hypothermic, and luckily it was one of those moments where Brandy had the van in the right spot, and I had a whole bunch of extra layers in the van that I could pass out to everybody that made the rest of the ride enjoyable. So having the right gear is good. Nate, unfortunately, didn't get to experience the joy of another layer and had to actually get called to come get picked up because it was too cold for him to do the final descent. So,
and we've all been there in that situation where you're just so cold that you're shivering and you can't control yourself and you don't want to lose the bars and go down. And I feel for you, Nate. That's a rough spot to be in.
Got through about a quarter of that descent. And like, I told Paul,
nope,
no more.
Nope.
I can't see straight. I can't talk. Well, my arms are shaking. My legs are shaking. Let's pull over to the side.
We had this route, this predetermined route that we were all going to do. And one of our teammates was feeling good that day and decided he was going to jump off the front. And we were a little concerned because he was out of sight and he really got out of sight sooner than we thought he would. So we're like, did he go over a cliff? Is he okay? Is he going to get back? Is his GPS working? The whole bit. And so, Nate, after one of our other teammates kind of was having a moment of like, oh, I don't know, I think somebody should go out there and find it, but he didn't really want to do it himself. And I think Nate got volunteered to go out there with Paul, and you guys ended up trying to backtrack or catch up to him or intercept him at some point in time. Yep. And that's how you missed the bus and the all the gear that Lance had. Yep. So
it was inevitable. If it kept on raining, we were going to get too cold, but we knew that Carl was out there and we needed to find him.
Exactly. I'm still amazed at how many people Lance and Brandy were able to outfit with all of Lance's and Brandy's gear. And it was all like team issued stuff. And everybody either got like a jacket or a thermal jersey or arm warmers or a vest. It was shoe warmers. I think everything got handed out. So, and speaking of Lance,
it was a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I do have your arm warmers. I thought I left those in your van, but they made it home with me somehow. And they're washed and clean and waiting for you when you get here.
Okay. Oh. I might not miss them because I obviously had too much gear in the van that I was able to outfit like 10 people.
Yeah, you have quite the collection. One person that's got more stuff than me. Very cool. I've got one that I think is an absolute essential. We've got somebody on our team who might as well be called Magellan. Dr. Hanel put together some fantastic routes. And so my suggestion is you don't necessarily need to know the area, but there are so many tools at your disposal to go out there and put together some awesome training routes, something that's going to be safe. You can use the likes of Ride with GPS and Strava and anything else out there that uses, you know, stuff that's specific to cyclists, and look at heat maps, and you can look at other people's rides and segments, and you can really start to put together some pretty awesome rides. And we're lucky to have Dr. Hanel, who likes to do this stuff, and he's put together another week of amazing rides for us. And I think about this, and I think about like how much time and energy and effort he puts into it, and he just doesn't get enough credit for how much work he put in there and how thankful we should all be for the routes that we got to ride and the things that we get to see and the workouts that we got. Granted, he threw, I think originally it was supposed to be like 450 miles with like 47 or 48,000 feet of climbing. That's a lot, but at the end of the week, you get pretty strong from it. And he did a fantastic job. And having some routes, pre-planned routes that you know that you can upload and you can keep everybody together pays huge dividends. Did you guys have any thoughts on the routes or any suggestions?
Routes were great. And just to know that, for instance, when Carl got away, we knew that he had the route loaded.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of catching up with him.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yep. Do you guys have a favorite route that we did that week? What would be your number one? And I have sneaking suspicions or guesses as to who's had what favorite route, but how about you, Mike? What was your favorite?
So I had probably a tie of Deluz or Deluz.
Deluz, yeah.
And then there was I forget the title, but I believe it was the second or third day. No, it was the third day. It was the 72 mile.
72 mile.
Shoot, I'm totally spacing out.
The one with Huntley and
that was day one.
That was day one.
That was day one. Yeah.
Are you talking about the
Oh yeah, Durango? It was. Well, yeah, it was technically, I guess, day one. For some reason, I was thinking day one would be the 20 mile, but I guess that one doesn't count.
That was
the
warm up
ride. That was day zero.
So yeah, day one. Like I really like. I don't know. It was just kind of like me just opening my eyes to the awesomeness of training camp, but it was like, it had a pretty cool impact. And I was like, man, this is, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Awesome. What about you, Hep?
That descent into Tobago Springs down Montezuma Grid is like one of my favorite spots to ride a bike in the whole world. So that, I mean, to do like a 14 mile descent with two or three other teammates who are willing to go 50 miles an hour with you, that was just too much fun. So I love that spot. So that was probably one of my favorites.
That was definitely a fun one. How about you, Nate?
Palomar?
I
loved the South Grade climb?
Yeah.
And just the switchbacks. That was so much fun. You just have to pace yourself at that point after you've climbed up, and then you do the second one. And then you throw in the snow going through let's see, once we got closer to the top near the observation area
and the lookout area. Yep.
Yeah, that was.
So the South Grade climb going up to Palomar, that's where a bunch of people have kind of gone out there and thrown down. And I think Phil Guymon, his earlier videos when he first started coming on the YouTube scene, I think that was one of the places where he was trying to get that KOM. And there's like a whole video that he did on that. And the fact that, was it Chris Horner that he was trying to catch? I think maybe. But
maybe.
Anyway, it's that. That climb right there, and that climb is pretty renowned, and a lot of people know it. So, it's a pretty one. That's God. How many feet of elevation gain do you get on that thing?
I think both of them were around 2,500 feet.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Over how many miles? Is like 8 miles or something like that? 7, 8 miles.
So the second one, it looks like 6.77 miles.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So you get to ascend the side of a mountain through switchbacks and beyond the Strava leaderboard if you're super fast with some other people. Yeah, it was Chris Horner and Phil Guymon's in second place. How fast did they do that in?
30 minutes and 57 seconds for Chris Horner.
And Phil Guymon was, what, like a minute behind him or so?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did you stack up?
I was just tempo, so I was 50 minutes, 58 seconds.
Gotcha. Guyvan, did you hammer that one, or did you kind of just go easy up it?
No, that one I went up easy up it because I did the best I could.
On the East Grade? The East Grade?
On the East Grade.
Gotcha. Did you top 10 the East Grade?
No, I was actually surprised. I was only like 4 minutes or 8 minutes or something behind, and I'm 66.
Oh,
so
wow.
There are some serious dudes who have gone up that climb.
Gotcha.
I think the Tour of California went through there once, possibly, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
But I will say that descent on the East Grade was something else.
Oh, you want to tell us about that one?
yeah. So on that descent on the way back, I was one of the last guys to go down. And as I started going down, there was a truck in front of me that I had to go. I was going faster than the truck. So, and the truck was, the driver was really cool. He actually ended up slowing down a little bit and scooting as far over as he could to give him plenty of space. And as I passed that truck, Jake and
Ed
yeah. were right behind me in the car. And I didn't even realize it was them until after they passed me and I saw Jake's I don't know if it was just like your entire upper body out the window. I'm like, oh, shoot, I totally know. And so, and then they kept going. And then I see him slow down. I was like, and immediately I knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
So, and then I was like, oh, they're going to pace me all the way down. And it was the fun. I will say the two funniest descents I've ever had in my entire life happened at training camp. The one with, down the one, I'm
sorry, Montezuma.
I have a name here.
Yeah.
Montezuma,
and that one pacing behind the car like that. It did get a little bit hairy. I hit a top speed of 50.9 miles an hour, and I got within, like, I'd say, foot and a half of the car at one point.
Does Mrs. Beef Mountains know this?
She's seen the video, yeah.
Kids, don't try this at home, please.
Yeah, and it was super awesome. And as soon as I saw that Jake's phone stick out, I was like, yeah. It's going to be a highlight.
Awesome video of that. It was funny because we had actually finished. I mean, we bombed down the hill pretty good too. Actually, I think my full descent was faster than yours, but I think that had to do with the fact that at the top you were going slow, waiting for that truck to come by you. I don't know, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. But we got down to the bottom, and then there was a bunch of us, and Mike was still up at the top because he wanted to climb everything multiple times and just doing his beefy things up there. And so Ed and I were going to drive up the mountain because he wanted to get a pine cone for his wife, being a nice guy, right? And then we're like, well, we might as well just go to the top and make sure everybody's good up there. And we saw a few people, Lance and a couple other guys, bombing down, and they had no idea it was us. And we get to the top, saw Brandy, and we saw Mike at the top chatting with some guy. I have no idea who you were talking to or what it was about. I'm like, huh, I bet you he's going to go hard down the hill. And then we turned around and we start going down, and sure enough, we caught up to you. And I telling Ed, I'm like, he's going to absolutely love going down this hill, and he's going to go bomb past that truck. And sure enough, and then Ed passed you, and I'm like, hey, Ed, slow down a little bit. Let's let him jump on and see if he can have a little fun hanging onto the back of us and give him a little bit of an assist coming down the bottom. And sure enough, he did. And he and I had constant communication. I was spotting Mike, and he was watching him in the mirror, and we were watching all the corners and was kind of pointing things out. So, I mean, it might sound dangerous, but it actually wasn't. I would say it's no more unsafe than just going down it alone. But we were going down, and Mike got a sweet draft, and he was absolutely flying. And I had my hand out the window with the death grip on my iPhone and got some spectacular video. And it's just so fun looking at all of the scenery and then watching Mike just like lean into the turns and just flying around everything. He had this giant smile on his face. And the one thing that I'll never forget for the rest of my life is I can hear the wind blowing. I can hear everything else. And over all of that, I hear this, woohoo! he was just like yelling and hooting and hollering because he was having so much fun down there. I can't hit your tones there, Mike, but I can understand exactly where you were coming from with that big giant smile on your face. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'll probably never have a descent like that ever again. And like you said, Jake, I mean, yeah, it may have gotten a little sketchy, but it wasn't something that I was like,
no,
oh, that's just like above and beyond.
Yeah,
like,
we were constantly watching the pacing. We didn't want you to fall too far back. And when you started to get a little bit too close, we would accelerate just to keep a safe distance there. And you're just getting a nice little draft pulling you down the road. Pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Who's next? Who's up? Hep, is it your turn? All right,
I got one more.
Go ahead.
Chamois cream. It's chamois cream. Bring your chamois cream.
Yeah, bring a vat of chamois cream. A lot of it.
Yeah.
All the chamois cream. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are walking around a little funky, like they had just been riding a horse all day. Exactly. Yeah, you need to put that everywhere and then some, just to make sure that you're not going to die a slow, shabby death. That's a good one. Nate, what else you got?
Foam roller and lacrosse ball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How did that help you?
You know, I was surprised. Normally, I get pretty tight after hard workouts, and it's amazing what our bodies will do after multiple days where we spend probably just more time cycling than sitting.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have issues with being tight, except for my knee that I fell on.
Yeah.
But early on, I came into the camp a little bit tight, and having a lacrosse ball to work with, it's easy to pack.
Yeah.
And then one of our teammates had a foam roller, which I like to use. That was all I needed just to ensure that I was ready to go.
Sure. That's a good one. Yeah, there's other devices that you can bring as well that really aided in the recovery process. I think we had, four sets of the Air Relax boots, and there might have been a set of Normatex there that somebody else was using as well. So all kinds of compression boots. We had all the different iterations out there of the Theragun. I think we had, three of those things floating around the house. There was the rolling stick. There was not medicine balls, the foam rollers. What else was there for recovery?
Chocolate chip cookies.
Yes. there was lots of recovery aids and devices there. And that's another good thing that you want to pack in there, because if you're going to be going to a training camp, you fully want to enjoy it. So like Mike said, you want to have fitness that you can bring there so you can actually enjoy the rides and you're not suffering. But when you go to training camps, it's really, you focus on two things, riding and recovering. And the recovering is sleeping, proper eating, and like doing the other recovery things like, you know, stretching and foam rolls and other devices or aids that you can use. Those make a big difference. You guys have anything? Did you guys use all those things? Did you get on all the different devices?
I use the boots every day, the Air Relax boots, the leg massagers.
Yep.
I use those every single day, and I took a recovery drink every single day as well.
Yeah.
So those are the two main things I did.
How about you, Mike?
Well, for me, I did try the Air Relax boots for the first time there at the house, and they are phenomenal. They are now on my wish list of things I need.
Funny story here, real quick. Mike came over and he sat down. He's getting set up for the first time, and he's like, "Oh, I could just see it in his face." He's like, "I love these things." And then he's like, asked me like, "Hey, is it okay if my wife comes over here and sits on one of these?" And I knew exactly where he was going with this. I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." But you know, she's 7 months pregnant. She's out running around chasing the boys, and it's nice for her to come down and relax. But 100% Mike's angle with this was, she will love this, she will want them, and that's how I'm going to get them. So happy wife, happy life, and I get some Air Relax boots.
That's exactly it.
Well played.
Yeah. But for me, yeah, my recovery is, I typically, and this is kind of almost my daily ritual, after my ride, I'll drink my shake. And then for me, that what I found helps me the most is stretching. I typically stretch about maybe 20 to 30 minutes before bed as I work my legs with a massage gun.
Good. That's a good one. I know for me personally, the devices that we had there, I didn't bring anything because I knew that you guys brought everything. So I'm just going to like be a full on freeloader, but I knew that all of those things were going to be there. I didn't know I was going to need them as much as I did. And for me, I'm really subject to cramping. That's something that I've dealt with my entire life. And a lot of times it's early season stuff. And a lot of times it's because you come out of the winter doing so much of the zone two stuff and not nearly enough of the high intensity or the high interval stuff. And when you get out to like a training camp after you haven't been doing that kind of stuff, the neurological component becomes more of an issue for me. So like usual, I dealt with cramps on day one and day two, and I still finished all the rides. I just kind of had to back off a little bit. But what was nice was when I got home, those Air Relax boots made a huge difference. The Theraguns made a huge difference. The stretching made a huge difference. And so when we get to Wednesday, legs started to feel pretty good. Everything starts to come back into shape. You start to put some of those issues with the cramping in the rearview mirror, and the next thing you know, you're out there having fun again. And those made all the difference in the world.
I only cramped on day one.
Did you?
It was momentarily.
Really?
On Huntley.
Yeah. That's a beast of a climb.
I wasn't sure if I'd be able to make it.
Yeah,
but
it's not where you want to cramp. But
now that I think about it, you know, once your body kind of gets settled in there during training camp and your rhythm, if you're fueling right and you're pacing yourself,
yep,
the cramps weren't much of an issue.
Yep. So that's a good point. Good point, Nate. Mike, do you have anything else?
Nope, that's all.
Lance, and you're out of...
I'm out. Bring a brandy.
Bring a brandy. I've got I've got a couple more quick things that I'll run through, and then we'll jump into the one last thing here. Go with good people. Go with friends. Bring lots of friends, because that made a huge difference. And that was such, and it always is, it's such a good time. And you get to know some people that you consider friends even better, you know, so you can deepen your friendships. And just hanging out with good people all week, it makes the week that much more enjoyable. So that was one.
That was on my list.
Bring a friend who makes brisket, because that's good. Mike made this brisket. Did you make that at home and then you drove it down, or how did you do that?
Correct. Yes. And it's actually, it actually ended up being perfect, because brisket, when it rests, and I found that when brisket rests up to 24 hours, it tastes better than just hot off the grill.
Yeah.
So it was actually, that drive down there was a perfect rest time for the brisket. But yeah, I made it here at home and then drove it down.
That was spectacular. Everybody was like, oh my God, this is so good. Like, I'm actually salivating right now thinking about it. And then you made another, it was like a beet stew kind of thing. Do you want to, it's like a borscht? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the most traditional classic Russian food out there. The beet stew.
Gotcha.
Which you swear by.
For
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. The phytonitrates in there, baby, that stuff is rocket fuel. So, and I was expecting one thing and then I ate it and I'm like, oh my God, Mike, I need the recipe. This is freaking good. So I'm looking forward to making that with my wife. Should be tasty. Good. The last thing, you can make your rides really stinking fun. And there's something that we've done for just about all of our training camps. And we do a daily competition for, you know, it's more than just coming home and saying, oh, I beat you up this Strava segment, or I got this KOM. I mean, yeah, sure, that's fun. But for our camp, we do this every year where we've got four awards that are handed out nightly. You've got your gold leader jersey for the best all-around rider of the day. We've got a sprint competition. So you guys, everybody knows what the stop ahead sign looks like. Not the stop sign, but the stop ahead sign is coming up. That's a sprint point. We've always done that in a lot of our team rides. We do that at training camp. And whoever gets the most of those during the day will get the sprinter jersey award. There's the KOM. And basically the folks that put this thing together, Mr. Handel and Mr. Hatfield, will have some predetermined climbs that they don't tell anybody. So you've just got to go hard on all of the climbs, and they come back and they will take a tally of who got the best time up, whatever the climb was that they did for that day. And the person that had the fastest time for that day wins the KOM jersey, or rather the socks, because we actually have a pair of socks that correspond with each one of these things, and you get to wear them for the next day until somebody takes them from you, or you have to trend to defend your title. And then the last one would be the red jersey or red socks, and that's for the most aggressive rider of the day. And so that just makes things a little bit fun, a little bit more dynamic. And all of a sudden, those stop ahead signs, you're paying attention to those, or the climbs that you think, all right, this might be on their list. This could be the one. So I'm going to go a little bit harder. You're going to go a little bit harder. If you want to be super aggressive on everything that day, because you want the, you know, the gold socks, then you're going to do that. Or if you want to just be super aggressive and do something bigger, whatever, than everybody else, like Nate, when we're all doing 9,000 feet of climbing, Nate's going to go out there and do 12 because that's what Nate does. Then, you know, that's how you win yourself a pair of red socks. So that just made the dynamic a little bit more fun, a little bit more enjoyable. And it adds a whole another layer of fun to the camp.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think about that?
I love getting together at night, going over the route the next day.
That's fun too.
Talking about what people achieved. Yep. I think that's the cherry on the top at the end of the day, after everybody's suffered together.
Sure.
And then a little communal moment, so to speak.
Sure. Sure. So. Yep. And then on that note, I think, the one last thing, sun. Go somewhere where there's sun, especially if you're from the Pacific Northwest. Go somewhere where there's some warm weather. But other than that, I think we're pretty much out of tips here, and that's what made our camp successful. And that was the fourth one I think we've done as a team. We missed 2021 because everything was still shut down. It should have been the fifth, but it was our fourth one, and we had a spectacular time. It was fantastic. It's a trip that I'll never forget. A lot of fun stuff that came out of that. Anything else that you guys want to toss in before we move on to the next little bit here? Bueller?
Good.
Gotcha. Good. Calling it done. All right. Let's jump into one last thing. You guys have all listened to the podcast before, so you know how this goes. Lance, I'm going to put you on the spot first. Go for it, buddy.
I think I have serious regrets that I'm not going to be in Vancouver this weekend for the inaugural Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial. So I'm sure that was probably going to come up again on this One Last Thing segment, but I certainly hope that people listening are signing up and going to show up and do the race. And it's unfortunate that I won't be able to be there to support it or to help work at it.
Where's the closest airport, Lance?
I'm 30 seconds away from an airport.
Uh-huh.
Lance, but I've got a van and a wife and a dog with me, and I'm not flying all of them.
You can be home on Saturday night. You can be back down there Saturday night. I'll pick you up.
Right on. You would.
It's all good. Cool. Nate, one last thing.
Daylight savings time.
Saving. Daylight saving.
It's changing, right, this weekend?
It is.
So we get to ride outdoors work.
This is true, my friend.
So
what does that mean?
I'm looking forward to flogging with my friends.
Yeah, buddy. Sorry with the saving thing. I'm a little neurotic about that, I guess. But everybody says savings. It's not savings. It's saving. Just saying. Little PSA. Yes, and that is one of my favorite days of the year.
Yeah.
Absolutely one of my favorite days of the year, the time change. Cool. Mike, Guy Van, hold on.
So my target for this week is this dialed guy right here. All these dialed guys are super strong, beef mountains, and this guy has got a crazy sprint. So what I want to do is stay on his wheel as best I can, at least so I can watch what he does.
That was the moment that Beef Mountains was born.
Oh, boy.
That was classic, and I love that whole persona. I love how that has just been your thing, and Beef Mountains is fantastic. Thank you, Dylan, so much for that little soundbite and for your Quap Face YouTube channel and doing what you do here. He's a good dude, and I will be forever thankful for that piece alone, though. One last thing, Mike.
Oh, shoot. Well, I guess everybody pretty much knows now, but I got a third kid on the way now. So my race season is probably going to be extra short. Going to end around maybe mid-May-ish. Hopefully, if things go well, it'll be a bit longer, but
yeah,
that's the plan.
Mike's going to go from playing man-on-man to zone defense. Nate and I know that drill pretty well.
Yeah.
So you'll get through it. You guys have got this thing down to a science, and I think that you'll probably end up having a little bit more free time than you think. The first one's always like a learning process. The second one's like, oh, crap, now there's two of them. And the third one, you're like, yeah, I've been there, done that. You just throw them in a backpack and go. So,
yeah, I'm hoping maybe for like a month of like, okay, kind of got to tone it down. But then hopefully I'll be able to ramp up towards the back end of at least the summer and stuff.
That would be fantastic. And I have a sneaking suspicion you'll figure out a way to keep your fitness pretty sharp. You've got a trainer. Worst case scenario, you'll be grinding away on that during – some random hours, even though you get 4 hours of sleep from being up all night with a kid. Yeah.
If I'm hearing you right, are you warning KOM holders in the Northwest that they should be watching their Strava closely before May?
So my scheduled first one is this upcoming weekend. Well, no, next weekend, because this weekend I got to go to a wedding. Next weekend.
Which one? Which one are you going for?
Ooh, now those are secrets.
A hint, is it local, like here in the Vancouver, Camas area, Washougal area, or?
Well, it's a local one, and it's held by a guy that's currently on the podcast.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
What are you taking of mine?
Oh.
Come on, now. Come clean.
I'll give you a hint. It starts with an S.
Starts with an S. Well, crap. I don't even know what that's called or what that is. Oh, Sierra. You're going
to
take Sierra?
House, yeah.
Oh, well, no.
I won't say I'll take it. I'll be going for it.
I'm taking a stab at it.
I've actually driven up Sierra going home twice on two different occasions watching people attempting to take my KOM. They're both teammates, and they're both of the Bracompas family. It was pretty funny. They were they're out drilling it. I'm like, hey, I'll pace you. Come on, jump on my wheel or my bumper. I'll pull you up. And they came up a little bit short, but I have a sneaking suspicion.
It's a serious climb. It's a serious climb.
Yeah. What's my time on this? Like 450 something?
Yeah, right around 5 minutes, I believe.
Yeah.
Like, It's been a while since I attempted it, but it's been on my list for a while, and I'm thinking it's going to be a good one to go for.
Yeah, I was thinking that you're going to try and take something a little bit longer, a little bit crazier, but you're so light with so much power behind you. I think that you're gonna obliterate that one. So, au revoir, Sierra. It was nice when it lasted.
I think
I took that back in like 2016 or something like that. But yeah, it's gonna go some point in time. Somebody faster, lighter, stronger.
Well, my plan was to go for the red to red or echo red to red race.
Yeah.
But then I have some morning stuff that came up yesterday, and it just, I was like, oh, I'll just turn it into a afternoon K1 day. So,
well, then you're going to have to go pick on Hepler and Nate too. You can't just pick on me. Right on. Cool. All right. So my one last thing is, like Lance just mentioned, we've got the Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial coming up this week, and we would love to see as many people come out and do that as possible. Weather is threatening to throw a little bit of that wet stuff at us, but I'm going to try and convince people that that's not a big deal. It really isn't. You know, if it's cold, so what? You got gear for that. And what's nice is if it's just going to be a little light rain or even in the afternoon, generally speaking, it's not super windy out there when the clouds are kind of just slowly rolling in. So you're not going to have to deal with the wind, which can definitely be a factor. Like when you're doing the out and you have that massive tailwind, that's fantastic. That's good times. It's fun and it's fast. And then you turn around and guess what? That wind just punches you right in the face and you're like, oh, this sucks. I can remember doing it the first or second year, the same course. And I remember riding back into a pretty stiff headwind and this poor lady was on her road bike paperboying it because the wind was blowing so hard. And I'm like, you got this. And she's like, I effing hate the wind. This effing sucks. I was just laughing and just kept going. But we've got a lot of cool prizes out there. I'm super thankful for Wahoo Fitness and Scratch Labs. They've both stepped up in a big way. And we've got a few other people that are donating stuff. So we'll have stuff out there for podiums. We will have a raffle. Everybody who gets or enters into the race will get one raffle ticket. If you land on the podium, you get another raffle ticket. And if you want to purchase some raffle tickets, we'll have those available as well to give away some really cool prizes like bike computers and heart rate monitors and gear and helmets. It's just going to be a super cool thing. So we're going to be doing this chip timed. So I believe that will be the first time that chip timing has ever been used for the TTs out there. So we'll have instant results. We'll have turnaround splits so you can see what your in and your out times were. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. We're going to keep it fast paced, get people in and out of there and not have people stand around waiting. And what's going to be really nice is results are going to be instant. We're not going to be having to wait until 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night or even the next day for the results to come up that are, you know, done by hand that theoretically are correct, but not always correct. So we'll have a lot of things playing in our favor. So looking forward to all of that stuff this weekend on Saturday. If you want to come out and register, you can do a day of registration. First rider goes at 9 a.m. If you want to get there early and register, that'd be fantastic. But online registration is open until Friday evening, and you can go to obra.org and find it there, or you can go to dialedcycling.com/MMMTT, and that will take you to all the information page there. Cool. That's enough. I've rambled on way too much today. You guys got anything else? We all good?
It's all good.
Awesome. Mike, Nate, appreciate you. Lance, have a good rest of your week. Drive safe.
Thank you.
We will catch everybody next week. Until then, bye for now.